This is another iRaw podcast.
And finally, yep. I just felt somewhere that I was like, okay, I don't care what's next. I'm just doing this and helping animals, and it feels really, really good. And I'm not worried about anything.
My name is Katya, and this is The Animal That Changed You. I believe loving an animal is one of the most accessible, most available portals for self-healing in the whole world. It's my privilege to encourage you to open your heart to animals and challenge you to deepen your compassion just a little bit more. Welcome to The Animal That Changed You. Can you guys believe that this is episode 42 of The Animal That Changed You? Can you believe it? 42 episodes of Tatsy, this little mighty podcast that started in August of 2021. Pandemic life. I'm so glad that we've come this far, and I could never have done it without you. I just wanted to say that today. Hi! Welcome back. I read some quotes about animals that really cracked me up this week. Well, some cracked me up, some touched my heart, but one was from Jerry Seinfeld, and he said, this is some quote that I found, "Dogs are the leaders of the planet. If you see two life forms, one of them's making a poop and the other one's carrying it for him, who would you assume is in charge?" That is so true. I mean, it's true. We're here to clean up their poop. The other one is touching, and it's Marilyn Monroe. And she said, has been known to say, "Dogs never bite me, just humans," which says a lot. Okay, last one. One more quote. "Do I sometimes spend my time looking for quotes about animals?" I do. I mean, what would you expect to do with my time? Sigmund Freud, really smart person, said, "Time spent with cats is never wasted." And if a genius says it, you know it's true. Okay, that's what I wanted to tell you today. And I'm going to take you right to the episode now with Nicole Patrick. Nicole Patrick is here with us today, actress, animal advocate. I'm going to say that all over again when I do my geek out minute. So let me just take you to it. Let me introduce you to this wonderful person if you don't know her. And let's all be friends. Nicole Patrick, singer, songwriter, actress. I'm going to just throw also in there jazz singer because that is a very specific thing that not everybody can do. Animal activist, animal rescuer, Juilliard School. Just a small little thing I want to throw in there that you went to Juilliard. Founder and president of Chic and creator of something really, really cool and much needed, which is called Rescue Spot, which we're going to talk about, a centralized platform to streamline the pet adoption process. Where have you been all this time? And I want to hear about the overlap for you between art and animals and how you do it all. And of course, I'm going to ask you, who was the animal who changed you? So yes. Welcome. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I feel like you're kind of a kindred spirit with me. When I first found your podcast and found out about you, I was like, oh, okay, she's kind of like me. She's got the arts thing going on. And right when we first spoke, immediately you were like, okay, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? And I knew it was coming from you having had the similar kind of background as me. So it's cool to meet a fellow animal lover and kind of artsy lady.
Artsy lady. Yeah. I mean, I
grew up between Manhattan and Westchester, and my whole family was in film. My parents and my grandparents, my dad worked for Woody Allen most of my life. So I was on set my entire life, and I was very shy as a little girl and had bad dyslexia. So I was always taken out of class, and animals were my best friend. And that's the way that I was able to connect and feel safe. So I always wanted to be a vet, but then when I got a little bit older, I got into singing and decided I wanted to be on Broadway and an actress. And I started working professionally in film pretty young, around 14. And then I moved out on my own when I was 16. And I had one Yorkie that lived with me. And I was singing all the time. I was going to Juilliard for pre-college and working as well. And I always wanted to work with animals and volunteer, but it was really hard because when you're auditioning every day and you never know what your schedule is going to be, it's pretty much impossible with a rescue to be like, okay, I can do this day, that day. And usually totally. They have some sort of, commitment. So it's hard to get involved.
So unpredictable.
Yeah. But one day I was probably like 18 years old. I was walking around on the Upper East Side in Manhattan, and I'd never adopted a pet before. I knew about adopting. I knew it was the right thing to do, but I hadn't really, for one reason or another, done that yet. I had one dog personally, and I was also, I don't even think I was 18 yet. I think I was 17. So I had enough responsibility for that age. But I went into this super high-end pet store, and I saw this tiny Pomeranian there, and she was just as sick as could be and just shivering and shaking, and there was something really wrong with her. So I asked the kennel attendant assistant, you know, what's going on with her? Is she okay? And he just totally like sweep me aside and just was like, oh, she's fine. She's scared. She's nervous. And I was like, all right, this is a little bit weird. There's something odd going on here. But I left, and it kind of always stayed in the back of my head for the rest of the, you know, remaining days of the week. And by the weekend, I called the ASPCA and a few other places in New York City and was just like, there's this dog in this pet store and something is kind of off. And they were just, I mean, now looking back on it as a rescuer, I would just be like, okay, what do you want me to, I mean, I long
take a number
pets to save.
Yeah.
So take I a want number. To help you, but I don't know how.
But it's sweet that you were like, probably how most people are, like, oh, yeah. I see something and I'm going to say something.
Exactly. And, yeah. I didn't know what to do. You almost feel powerless because you're like, well, something is really wrong here, but what are you going to do? So I went back to the store and saw the dog again, and she was just really sick and like dying, but she was very expensive because she was in one of those Upper East Side, you know, pet stores that obviously she was coming from a puppy mill and they were marking her up 7 times the price. But I just couldn't get her out of my head. So I took my little bit of savings and put the deposit down on her. And I just took everything that I owned and sold it, and sold it on eBay and in consignment stores. And I borrowed money. I couldn't tell my parents because they were going to be like, Nicole, you're 17. You already have one dog. This is enough. So my friends loaned me money and I bought the dog and brought her immediately to the vet. And the vet was just like, this puppy is so sick. We probably not going to survive. She only weighed about, I think, 10 ounces. She only weighs 3 pounds now at 13. So she's tiny. And the vet saved her. She stayed at the vet for about 3 weeks. The East Side Animal Hospital in Manhattan, I will forever be indebted to, because they took her home at night, the nurses, and force fed her and really made sure that she survived, because I, now knowing what I know, she should not have survived. And seeing what I've seen with other animals, she's a real fighter, this little Pomeranian. Her name is Tribeca. And for about 5 years, she had liver shunts and hypoglycemia and wasn't able to be left alone at all, because she would just constantly be having these attacks that you'd have to, she'd seize up and you'd have to force feed her Nutrical or maple syrup to get her blood sugar back up. But
what was this? This isn't parvo.
It's not parvo. She just, they weren't feeding her basically so that she would stay small. And she had some sort, I think it was Giardia, and she just somehow survived it. And so the mix of them not feeding her, her having just natural liver shunts because she was so inbred, and this hypoglycemia that usually puppies would grow out of that, but she just never grew out of it or was a late bloomer with it because she was about 5 or 6. But she survived and is still kicking today. She was with me in Italy and is,
she's,
you know,
a fighter.
The fighter, the one
eye. She has a world to see. Yeah. She's got a lot
to
do.
Things to do. Exactly. But that really opened my eyes to pet stores and to these puppy mills and the backyard breeders and to how terrible it is, and that this is a huge problem in America. So it kind of became my mission to let people know about this and inform people and try to, in my own little way, help stop this. So I started Chic Chien Chateau. At the time, it was just a little kind of backyard hobby of mine that I would, anytime someone wanted to get a dog, I would say, just instead of going to the pet store, give me like 2 weeks and I will try and find you the dog that you want. I can do it from set. I can do it online. I don't have to physically go somewhere, but I will try and find this for you. And it worked and it was successful. And I was able to find pets in shelters throughout America. It was a lot of work because, you know, most of this was in probably 2008. And most of the time when you're looking at listings on Adopt-A-Pet or Pet Finder, you have to call the shelter and then the shelter doesn't answer you. And we'll get into that later. But I was able to make it work. And so Tribeca just totally changed my life in that sense. She's so feisty and amazing. And she's probably 3 pounds now, and I have a 150-pound German, long-haired German Shepherd. And she would just like be like, "You stay away from me. I'm busy. I'm sitting with my toy." And she'll just bark at him, and all the dogs know, okay, she's a lady of the house. She knows what's going on. So.
Oh my God, can she teach classes? I need a little bit of, I'm like, I'm right now like, Tribeca, what should I do with the rest of my day? Exactly. I think it's really remarkable that you are calling out the truth of this story. I feel like a lot of people in rescue either avoid or don't want to own how we get into this. And often how we get into this is making the quote unquote wrong decision, like buying a dog or, you know, going to a breeder. Not that that's wrong. I don't want to tell, this space does not exist to tell people, you know, how, if you love an animal, wherever you got that animal from, then I have no legitimacy and I don't get to decide whose love is valid, right? You love an animal, you love an animal. But I know even for me, like we had a lot of pets growing up that they were, I don't know where they came from, but I never went to a shelter.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that they existed and we got to love them and they brought out my natural gift for loving animals. But I just think it's a really important part of your story to say, like, I went to a pet store. I walked into that store. I didn't go, "Oh, I want the fanciest dog in here." But I did go, "That dog's sick and I'm going to save it the only way I know how, which is going to be to give you money. And this is a transaction. But I still need to help that dog." Yeah. And how it opened your eyes up to the shelter world. That's a really interesting thing I just want to call out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's that kind of catch 22, because in our world, we know that it's for us better to adopt a pet, but however gets you there. So, you know, at the end of the day, if having a pet like you and I from either a pet store or not knowing, did my parents buy it or get it, you know, from the neighbor, if that made us down the line save so many animals, it was definitely worth it.
Totally. But, yeah. And I around the same time that you had your hustle, I had a hustle called Shelter Shopper in Los Angeles, where I was doing the same thing, which is crazy bananas, where I would go, "Hey, please don't buy a dog because I can help you find one at the shelter. Just give me a few weeks." And like, it might be a Dachshund that's a year and a half instead of, you know, 3 months, but can you handle that? Like, somehow I ended up losing money. It was a business where I paid money instead of earned money. It was very confusing for my husband, but it cut my teeth. I mean, I would drive around all the shelters of Los Angeles and there are at least 15. And if you're counting like Lancaster, like the county shelters far out. And God, people would just call me, you know, the staff would be like, "Katya, there's a spaniel mix." And I'd be like, "On my way for the person who wants the spaniel." And, It showed me how much I'm willing to do. And it sounds like you were doing that same thing because, you know, that's just something that's just thankless work because you want to help.
Exactly. It's kind of like a personal shopper for puppies.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because that was the whole concept behind Chic Chien Chateau, this mouthful of a name of a rescue that I created, because I wanted it to be upscale and I wanted it to be something that I could tell my Upper East Side friends and, you know, hoity-toity parents of my friends, "Hey, this is a really nice thing that I'm doing. It's upscale. It's not a scary shelter. I'm going to find the pets for you. They're going to look better than any, you know, sick little puppy that you're going to get from a pet store. That, God forbid, unfortunately, will probably die a few weeks after you get it." So the whole point of it at the time was to be like a little bit a play on that. You know, we're a little bit snobby, but we're not. We're getting you the shelter dog, but we're going to play up to you and give you what you want. So you feel good that I still got this fancy designer dog.
Nicole, and that is smart branding. That's all that is. That's just, you know, your clientele. And yeah, I'm playing with my hair, everybody. I'm on a Zoom and they see me playing with my hair. I play with my hair. I'm trying to change. There's some things I can fix about me and some things I cannot. Just letting you know, because I took my scrunchie down, everyone. Giving you a visual. I love that you made it upscale. I love that you made it fancy. And yeah, that's purposeful and intentional. And I think that's really smart. How did Tribeca then lead to, so Tribeca led to this service you were doing, and then from, yes. and that was Chic Chien Chateau. And then from yes. there came, I'm sure, just a million hours of experience realizing how much harder it is to adopt than it has to be.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it was just, even in this early stage that I didn't really have a foster rescue, I was just kind of helping people. I didn't have any animals in my own possession. I was really connecting people and that's it. But I would just fill out 70 applications a day when I was trying to help someone yeah. find a pet. And it was all variations on the exact same question. And it was really annoying and really frustrating. And of course, with that comes the actual adopter getting excited about every pet they apply for and thinking, okay, I'm going to, you know, get this pet. It's going to be great. I'm going to tell my kids. And until you kind of get used to it and get a little bit like weathered and worn, you don't realize that the reality is when you go to adopt a pet, it's going to take a little bit of work and it's going to take, you know, trying to adopt 3 or 4 or during COVID, maybe 10 different pets and finding out that there were already 50 other people in line for that pet. And it's kind of a snowball effect because everyone wants to adopt a pet and then the rescues end up with so many applications. So they're not able to keep their website updated or get through all the applications at once or get back to people. So everyone gets frustrated with everyone. And you almost forget that everyone's also trying to do the same thing and just help animals on both sides.
It's so well put. You're really breaking it down. You're breaking down the invisible parts, the parts yeah. where, you know, moms or dads are applying for their kids and they're excited. And then they're, you know, I get involved when they're mad because no one's gotten back to them. And I have to gently just say, you know what, these rescues, everybody's a volunteer for exactly. the most part. So they're doing the best they can. But I, you know, we can never control the stories that other people tell themselves. We can control the stories we tell ourselves, and those stories will make us or break us. And I think that the problem that your rescue spot is identifying is trying to create a place where the stories might be a little bit more compassionate and a little bit more patient and tolerant because you have streamlined the process and you're going to explain why it's frustrating and why it doesn't have to be to apply to adopt an animal. I also want to say that, you know, when you're rescuing, rescue is such a reactive business. You know, lives are on the line. Yeah. You never know what's going to happen or who's coming or what foster's going out of town or, you know better than anyone, Nicole. So it's like if you're united under the dollar, really different, you know, from the breeder perspective or the pet store perspective, you're coming at it from a very different angle. It's not a reactive business. It's a profit driven business.
Exactly. Yes.
But rescue's not. Rescue's about saving and rescue's about, you know, moving fast and smart to save as many lives as you can and not foregoing quality for quantity. It's a lot to handle.
Yeah. And it's something that you go to sleep thinking about and you wake up thinking about, and it's not something that you can put in a box and say, okay, a lot of times for rescuers, they can't put it into a box and say, okay, maybe I understand why these other people are frustrated. Because in your mind, you're just thinking, well, I got to get this done. I can't even think about the adopters because I have 70 other dogs on death row that I need to save. And that's more important than I'll deal with getting them adopted later. And it's just a very vicious cycle for everybody. And after doing Chic Chien Chateau kind of as a little personal shopper side thing, I was working as an actress and I got very fed up with it. I had a project that I was working on for like 3 years. And after it was kind of my big break, and I'd done so much work for it, and it just all fell apart. And I was sick and tired of being in film and needed a break. So I went to Africa for 3 months, and I lived in a tent and volunteered with cheetahs and lions and leopards and at an amazing animal sanctuary in Namibia called Nankuse. And they had just every animal that you could ever imagine. And we were doing really cool, really important work and like really going out there and saving animals. And I was standing in on surgeries of opening up cheetahs' stomachs to get, you know, twigs out that had punctured their stomach lining. And so it kind of really opened my eyes to, this is what I need to be doing. I need to be working with animals. And
I
felt it. And I felt like finally, after all these years of struggling, and even when you get a role, the next thing, the first thing that you think, or at least that I think, is, okay, what's next? What's next? How am I going to do this well? And then what's next? And how am I going to snowball this? And finally, I just felt somewhere that I was like, okay, I don't care what's next. I'm just doing this and helping animals, and it feels really, really good. And I'm not worried about anything. I'm just happy and at peace.
Oh, I love that. It was just amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. So when I came back to New York from Africa, I was like, I've got to make a change. And I have this dog, Gatsby, who's the other dog that changed me, who is the love of my life. He's the most beautiful dog you'll ever see. I'll call him in here later. But he's a golden retriever, cocker spaniel, something mix. And he just has the world in his eyes and so much personality and is amazing. And he's one of those dogs that everyone on the street stops him and just says, he is stunning. Where did you get him? What breed is this? And of course, that's when I'm like, well, he's rescue. Let me tell you, let me bring you into my cult.
Look how nice you are about it. People like make eye contact with me on the street. And I'm like, this is a rescue dog. This is the best dog. I got it from they're like, ma'am, I'm looking at I'm not even, people now avoid me because they're like, ma'am, I'm looking at my mom behind you in a parking lot. Like, why are you talking to me about your dog? I'm like, sorry. So I'm taking a note from you right now. How lovely, how classy you just described the exchange. Note to self.
Well, so that's how I convince them to get in the rescue world. But Gatsby, you know, really taught me about adopting, because I adopted him. And again, playing with the theme of just that it's kind of complicated to adopt. He was one of those dogs that I saw him online. I knew I had to have him. Two of my pets had just passed away. It was a golden retriever and a black lab within a few weeks of each other. So I wanted a dog that looked like a golden retriever and kind of lab mix. And Gatsby looked exactly like that. So I messaged the rescue and I called them, and they probably thought I was a psychopath, because literally for 3 weeks, I called them and no one got back to me. And I was like, well, okay, obviously these puppies are gone. They're like the cutest things in the world. I better just move on. But it was meant to be. And they called me and I adopted him, and he just totally changed my life and taught me everything about that adoption is the way to go. You know, something I already knew, this just nailed it in for me. And so when I got back from Africa, I kind of knew I wanted to work with animals. I kind of had this Chic Chien Chateau thing going on, but I didn't really know where it was all going to come together. I was applying to volunteer at a lot of big cat sanctuaries throughout America, but there aren't many in New York. So I would have had to move to Texas and,
Could join us.
Yeah. I was like, I just didn't know what to do. I was like, I want to work with animals. I don't know how. I still want to be acting. I don't want to give up my career and just clean, you know, cages in a shelter and know that this is going to be what's for me. On the side, I started working for Rescue in Manhattan. I started just as kind of an assistant, but they gave me more opportunity, and I ended up kind of running the whole thing for the owner. And in running the whole thing, it was me every weekend with about 45 dogs and 15 mm-hmm. kittens alone in a play space or boarding facility, doing these adoption events and sitting on my phone the entire time, checking references, reading applications, trying to, you know, multitask.
And reacting, yeah. All reacting. I get it. Yep.
And I was just like, what am I? This is insane. How am I going to do all of this at once? I can't try and find fosters for these pets and try and read all these applications and, you know, do all this. I was literally going insane and happy to be with the pets, but also miserable because I had no life, because I was doing the job of 15 people like every single other rescue in America is doing. And even if you have, I don't care if your best friend's animal sanctuary and have, you know, unlimited amounts of volunteers, there always are going to be more animals to save. And you're always going to be thinking, what more can I do?
Can we take a minute to just shout out right now? Just a sincere and authentic and genuine shout out to all the rescuers out there.
Yeah.
Just like you are on the front line, you are in heroes, and you included, Nicole. So many people don't see what you do, don't hear what you do, and we do. And we could never make it in this world without you. I just want to shout out. Thank you for letting me take that moment. Please go on.
No, I mean, it's so true, though. These are, you and I know this, but the rest of the world doesn't know this. And these are people that go home crying and upset and just heartbroken and wanting to do more.
And totally. And all the fosters, all the volunteers, you too, you are the backbone of every rescuer. Yeah. And every rescue, just those volunteers and fosters are, I mean, they keep the whole thing going.
Yeah. They're everything.
They're the glue. They're everything. They're heroes. We're talking about heroes, shelter workers, people who work at the shelter, the staff. You know, I most of them got into this work because they love animals.
Yeah.
They don't want to deal with people and euthanize pets. In my experience, boy, shelter staff, they're some of the best people I've ever known. Funny, and they go home crying too.
Exactly. And it's really true. And that even the volunteers, I've worked with volunteers that have left their Christmas dinner to go get a dog. And I pull a lot of dogs from Georgia and, you know, to drive to another state to get a dog before the next morning when it's going to be euthanized. And these are people that have no stake in it. They're not doing it for the glory. They're not doing it for anything other than they want to save an animal's life. And so it's amazing.
It's amazing.
It really is. And so that's, you know, all these things go hand in hand with each other. And so I was doing that and working with really amazing people, but I was just kind of working myself to the bone emotionally and just, it was too much. So I stepped back and said, how can I make my life better with being able to do what I want to do, but not feeling like I'm overwhelmed with not having any time to actually get anything done. So I started my own actual rescue. I took Chic Chien Chateau and I turned it into a foster-based rescue of my own and started pulling dogs from Georgia and North Carolina and South Carolina. And with the same concept as before, keeping it high end, I was going in mainly Connecticut, driving to Greenwich, Connecticut, and more affluent areas, and charging higher adoption fees. And in that, I was able to save money from each adoption fee for a medical needs fund. So what I did, and for these people, it wasn't such a big deal because I would explain, okay, at the ASPCA, it's $50. For me, it's $700. But all of that money is going towards saving other animals. So I was able to pull dogs with cancer that were going to be put down, that needed their limbs removed, that were going to be put down, that had terrible skin conditions, and get them fully vetted and find homes for them. And,
that's,
you know,
so amazing. You have this whole other leg, this whole other special needs department of your rescue. Yeah. And oh my God. It's like not their fault.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, okay, if I know that I'm near, and I am near all these areas that have the money and have the means to help out, that are not going to be affordable, that are not going to be available for these pets that are in you know, high kill shelters in Rome, Georgia, and these poor animals that have no chance because these shelters are totally overcrowded. They can't even keep up with anything, let alone fundraise for, you know, a dog that's got stage 3 cancer, you know, and mange. So I figured, let me kind of, you have to use the system a little bit and say, okay, well, I can charge these people more money. They're not going to care because it's still less than the $7,000 Pomeranian breeder in the pet store or breeder. Mm-hmm. So I figured this out and it worked really well. And people felt good about adopting. They felt good because they were like, okay, I'm doing something that A is not only saving one life, but it's going to save maybe 2 or 3 other lives.
Totally.
And keep, you know, keep it going. So I did that with Chic Chien Chateau. But once again, I came back to feeling like I was wasting my time calling references and checking applications. And it must be just something with me that I don't have a lot of patience for this because it drives me insane.
Everything's got a grind. But if you can make it easier, everyone will love you for it.
Exactly. It just drove me insane. So I thought, I've got to do something about this. This is enough. Now it's like 4 times in my life that I've just wanted to throw my hands in the air and give up with this. So I came up with Rescue Spot, which is a streamlined platform. It's a website and an app, and it streamlines the entire adoption process. So for adopters, they're able to complete adoptions online, do everything from A to Z, to search for a pet, to apply for the pet, to contact the rescue organizations. You can do all the paperwork for the application online and the adoption online, and then have all of your paperwork afterwards stored for you. But the big thing for adopters is that they only have to fill out one application once to apply for any pet on the site. So you're not going to have to...
What a great idea. What a smart, smart idea. You're talking about efficiency.
Yeah.
You're talking about removing a hurdle to make adoption not only more fun, right? We all want it to be fun and happy experience, but also easier. Yeah. Time is the most valuable asset we have. So you're saying, I see that. And it's a smart thing to realize the subtext of people who want to buy a dog are also buying convenience.
Exactly.
They want this kind of dog when they want it. And though I think saving a life is more important and more valuable than somebody's convenience, that's just my opinion.
Exactly.
And you're saying, well, let me try to find a way to make it more convenient for you to get what you want when you want it to the best of my ability by streamlining the process.
Exactly. People, like you said, people go into a pet store, people are very impulsive. They say, I want this now. And the reality is with rescue, it's not, I want this now. Maybe if you go into a shelter, but even then, nowadays, they want to know that, you know, you're going to have a good home. They want to do a test period. I want to make it as much as close to I want this now as I can for you. And just, you know, make it quick, make it easy. Also, just take out the emotional exhaustion that comes for adopters with trying to apply for so many pets and filling out these applications that are all the same questions and just getting their hopes up and then feeling like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I can't fill out another application and hope. I'm just going to go to a pet store.
Rescue could be more organized. There could be an association for rescuers like there is for dog trainers. There could be, you know, I am not suggesting we make it a corporate, you know, leg of America in no way, shape, or form. But it is still a little Wild West. There's still a lot of doubling up efforts. And I think nonprofits don't have to run that way. There is a way to get more done. And although I want to change people's desire for things to be quick and fast and easy, I want people to be okay being inconvenienced and being able to tolerate not getting what they want right away and having to work a little harder. I want people to know that that's where the transformation is. Mm-hmm. That is definitely part of me, Katia Litsky's like mindset. Unfortunately, I have not seen an email that says that I'm queen of the world and I don't get to make that happen. And I might just have to accept that some people want convenient things. They want things faster, quicker, and easier. And you are saying, that's okay. So I'm still going to try to help
make that possible with something that I believe in, which is smart. It's a smart thing to do. I'm like, no, can you change? It's better. It's like, no, Katya, it doesn't always work that way. No.
At the end of the day, if we get the animals adopted, we get the animals adopted.
Totally. Totally. And
I hear you and I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, I really want rescuers to get along. I really want people to work together. I believe they can. And unfortunately, I don't think we can ever save animals without people. We need people. Exactly. So we can't alienate them. We can't find reasons to make it harder. Exactly. And we can't expect people to let us treat them in ways that are unkind or unthoughtful just because we're doing something good.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, rescue kind of is really clicky at times. Just like, well, I'm a part of the secret society. I know the higher calling of the world. And you're not a part of it. And I'm going to let you have a little piece of it, but you're going to have to jump through a lot of hurdles. And I understand why it's like that, because you are doing, you're choosing who lives or dies in a way, and you're choosing to save lives. That is a big responsibility, and that's a big thing to kind of have on your ego. Yeah. And at the same time, then you also have this, oh, I have to save more, I have to save more, I have to save more. And when you see someone else that, when your whole life 24/7 for you is doing good and saving animals' lives, and you see someone come in and want to take a piece of that and say, oh, I want this, but I want it quickly and I want it now. It's very easy to feel frustrated and upset. And just like the adopters feel upset with saying, why is it so hard for me to get a dog or cat? The rescuers are like, what more can I give you? I'm saving lives here. I just leave me alone. Let my me credit do what cards. I have to do.
Well, every rescuer I know is like, my credit, everything's maxed out. You know, I'm not sleeping. My relationships are suffering. I mean, I want to acknowledge that it's like this in a lot of service-based industries, not just in the animal one. You know, there's this man, Jeffrey Canada, who started Harlem Children's Zone. His books, Fist, Stick, Knife, Gun is amazing. And it's like one of the first big charter schools. And yes, like we can, if anyone wants to email me to get into a brawl about charter like schools, I'm down for it. Like we can have all those discussions because I get both sides of everything. I'm here with you. But his book is amazing. And hearing about his life and how much he sacrificed to change the lives of just thousands and thousands of kids who nobody gave a chance to is incredible. It's remarkable. And it's not that different from it's another person who's willing to live for a cause above all else. And a lot of rescuers are doing this and they have a very important place in our world.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is helping adopters. Sure. But in the end, it's helping rescuers because they'll be able to continue their business, their heart, their passion.
Exactly.
If it's easier for them to.
Exactly. And that's our real, at the end of the day, purpose is to make it easier for a rescue organization. So for Rescue Spot, for the rescuers, we just try and streamline everything and make it super simple for them so that they can go and focus on actually saving the animals. So we pre-check all the references. We have a software that a reference takes a photo of themselves and a photo of the ID, and the rescuers then know, okay, this is actually Katya who's giving me this reference. They've written this down. I can read it. I don't have to call anyone. It's done. The references are done and simple and easy. They can pre-vet the applications. They can use trigger questions to say like, okay, this dog I know is not good with other dogs. So any application that's applied for this dog, if they say they have another dog at home, I want it to be flagged or automatically put into a different folder. So I don't worry about it. And I'll offer them other dogs to adopt. Not this one, but another one. And then they're able to store all of their pet information, their vet information. They can do all of their intake on the site. So everything they would do on different sites, they can do on Rescue Spot. And most importantly, we're giving them a forward-facing profile. So basically a website page of their own that they can have other pages that link to fundraising and to adoption events. And basically we're giving the rescues their own website. They'll have their own URL. So they can get rid of all the other things they're doing and just do it all in one place. And keep everything in one place. Because I was so frustrated with, different websites and different passwords and, exporting.
It's a super good idea. I hope that this is very successful. I'm already cheering you on. And I'm already like, how many emails can I send in at one time? How do you If you don't mind me asking, how do you are you able to balance this big project that is so purpose driven with your other passion of acting and singing and creating? Does one facilitate the other? Does one influence the other? How do you make sure you don't lose other parts of yourself while you're doing something that's really important, which is basically helping animals?
Definitely. I think that that's a very good question. I think you could relate it to probably every single person in the world, even just with having work and a personal relationship or friendship. For me, I can't have one without the other, because I'll get super into one and then get frustrated with it and need a way to express myself, either if it's rescuing animals and just feeling like, oh, I need to get all of this energy out. Well, then I'll go and sing, and that'll make me feel better. When you're singing, especially when I used to sing opera, and when I sang opera, you need to have so much emotion behind everything. And to have emotion, you have to have real world experience to know what those songs are speaking about.
Well, you travel a lot, so that probably helps your singing. Yeah. I've noticed in this talk.
But when I was younger, because I was acting so much from such a young age, I didn't have that much experience in my real life, because at 13, 14, 15, I was auditioning. I didn't have those friendships or relationships or my first boyfriend or anything like that. So I kind of felt like a shell of like, okay, I go to my audition, I smile, I do this, but I don't know anything about the world. So by having rescue and by having animals and by having seeing the hardships that they go through in shelters and feeling those emotions, it informs each other. And I feel like you can't really have one without the other, for me at least. And that helped me at a really young age when I didn't yet have those formative experiences. I was able to pull upon my animals to use in my performing. So they really are extremely connected. And even with the frustrations with, I'm sure you understand, being in entertainment, it's frustrating. And you feel bad sometimes when you go on 15 auditions and, you know, don't hear anything back and have to just keep going. When you're able to go home and hug your dog or hug your cat, it kind of just makes everything better.
Nicole, I mean, that's where it's at. Can you please tell everybody who's listening how they can find out more about Rescue Spot? And there's my dog shaking if you heard that little jingle. How can people support the work you're doing and find out more and just follow you and all the wonderful entrepreneurial animal related? My dog is really going at it over here. If you hear a scratching, you know, all the entrepreneurial activities that you have coming down the pike for you, I no doubt. How can people find out more?
My Instagram is Nicole_Patrick. And from there, you can find the link to Chic Chien Chateau, my dog rescue, which is too complicated to spell for you here.
So I love it. I'm doubly down on it now.
Yeah. Just go to Nicole_Patrick. And you can find out more information on Instagram about Rescue Spot and the dog rescue and all the cool stuff we're doing.
Awesome. I hope we can also hear you sing and watch you. I'm sure we'll be seeing you on all the big screens. You are a lovely guest and a lovely animal advocate. I'm really happy you made the time to join us.
Thanks. I'm so glad that I was able to connect with you. And I think we'll be good friends.
I look forward to it.
Thanks for tuning in to The Animal That Changed You, a weekly podcast that features extraordinary people talking about the extraordinary animal that changed their life. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Follow us on Instagram at The Animal That Changed You and tell your friends. If you've got a story about an animal that's changed your life, DM me, tell me about it, or tag us. We would love to hear. We appreciate you. And honestly, we love your animals so much. Thanks for being here.
For more great iRaw podcasts, visit iRawPod.com. That's IRoarPod.com.